on the last episode of the Mailbox Rogues Gallery.
You know, I'd almost forgotten that me and you are going to be getting out of here soon.
That's right, we will soon be out of here for good.
Yeah, out of our respective prisons. Just 12 hours now.
12 hours. Can't wait. See ya.
All right, goodbye.
Bye.
Now hang on, I've just realised, since I'm in Australia, there's a time difference, isn't there? Well, I hope he knows that when I say 12 hours, that's 12 hours for me. It's more like, what, 24 for him? I'm sure it'll be all right. I'm sure it'll be all right. I'm sure it'll be all right. I'm sure
present
it'll be
right. Day.
You'll never take me alive!
God blimey, he's getting away!
Somebody stop him, quick! Get the shooters there!
Jesus Christ! Gunfire! Better make a quick left turn!
Dogs, get the dogs!
Come on, Soapy! You can do it, son!
Get on, Soapy! Do it for the rest of us!
Wait, think, James, think. Where to next? Ah, there!
He's getting away!
What's he playing at? I hope he isn't thinking of driving over that conveniently placed ramp that we've been building there in the exercise yard.
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't! He couldn't!
Wheels don't fail me now!
Good to be back in England, here in this beautiful park. Great, I can't wait to see Birch. What time is it? He said he'd be here around now. What, is that somebody riding a motorbike through the middle of the park? What, they're heading straight for the duck pond. Who is this joker? Oh, no, hang on. That's not... Oh, for fuck's sake, it is.
Sean, hey!
Hello, mate, what an entrance!
Well, you know, we've not seen each other in so many years, I thought, why not enter in style?
And style it is, yeah. I mean, oh, that's quite some bike you got there. Where'd you get it from?
What do you mean, where did I get it from? You sent me the parts.
You don't mean in the cakes, do you?
Yeah, the cakes that you've been sending me every week, that's right.
With a motorcycle part in each one, yeah.
Yeah, I'll be honest, the first few weeks, I was like, well, Sean's cooking isn't up to snuff, but I didn't want to grumble, you know, so I kind of ate as many handlebars and gearboxes as I possibly could. But at the end of the day, I was just like, no, I can't keep up with this. I'm going to have to do something with these motorcycle parts. And lo and behold, I built a motorbike.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, when I really think about it, they are a bit of an odd caked ingredient. I've in my family we use them like hundreds of thousands. We always just sprinkle a few motorcycle parts just into any cake that we bake.
Yeah, it's certainly an original concept for a cake, but yeah, there was so many that I was able to build quite a nice hog to ride around on.
Fantastic, and they didn't mind you doing that in prison. They let you take it out of the prison, did they?
What do you mean, let me?
Well, you know, we got released today, didn't we? Well, I mean, I got released 12 hours ago. That's I just got here. I just flew in from Australia. But you would have just got released now, right? It's
what about our escape? You know, our breakout? The one that we talked about last time?
Well, we talked about a lot of John Dillinger's escapes, but, I mean, I got released. And you were due to be released kind of about now. Don't tell me you forgot. Wait, hang on. Did you break out of prison 12 hours before you were released?
Hang on, let me check my calendar. Oh, God, yeah. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, 12 hours before I was due to be released.
That wasn't very clever.
They're not going to mind 12 hours. I've served my time.
I don't know. I don't think they take too kindly to people breaking out of prison. On the motorbike, is that what you're telling me? That I sent you lovely cakes with motorbike parts and you used them to build a motorbike to break out of prison. Am I an accomplice?
Well, I mean, like, it was a beautiful bike, sure. I mean, you can tell that you used the best ingredients in that cake. You know, the best quality flour, the best milk, and very clearly the best British bike parts because I was able to fly around on that thing like nobody's business. And the guards were like, you stop that, you stop that. Where did you get parts for a bloody motorcycle here? And I was like, I'll tell you where. From my mate Sean. We're busting out of our own prisons. That's what we're doing today.
You mentioned me by name then.
I did. I said your name, the prison that you came from. I thought, how impressive is this going to be? Two people sorting out a prison breakout opposite sides of the globe at exactly the same time. They'll be talking about this for years.
Yeah, except I waited my 12 hours and got released.
Yeah, well, I didn't realise that, did I?
No, obviously not. Yeah. Well, I hope I don't get into any sort of trouble with you breaking out, because you know that old podcaster's oath is out the window. I served my time for your previous misdemeanors.
Hey, come on. No, the podcast oath stays, mate. Come on.
I really hate that oath. I really wish we hadn't signed it.
What if one of us accidentally tries and kills someone again?
What, again? You're not planning on doing it again, are you?
I'm not planning, but I'm not making any promises.
Never say never, I suppose, yeah. So, Evel Knievel, who was born Robert Knievel. Now, the guy had some interesting incidents in his life before he became a stuntman.
He did.
When he was a young man, he started his own ice hockey team, and then he convinced the Czechoslovakian Olympic ice hockey team to play against his team in this warm-up game for the 1960 Winter Olympics. So he got this Czechoslovakian team brought over. Within minutes of the game, he was ejected. He was, what is that, given the red card or something. I mean, an ice hockey's pretty brutal as well.
It is.
And he just walked out of the stadium. When the Czechoslovakians went to the box office to take their expense money, somebody nicked it. Probably Evel Knievel.
Well, I mean, when you're doing deals with a man called Evel, I mean...
Well, that's a good point.
It's foolish to think that you're going to get any other result.
That is a good point, yeah. And did you know how he got the name Evel Knievel?
I do. It was in prison.
It was in prison, yeah.
Which, you know, what did he get put in prison for?
Stealing Czechoslovakian money or something.
I mean, whatever it was he did, I mean, I don't think you could call the man evil for it. Like, if he was a serial killer, then, like, you know, fair enough, call him Evel Knievel, because what he did was pretty evil. But for what he did, you know, they could have just called him, like, Cheeky Knievel.
Cheeky Knievel. I suppose it doesn't have the same ring to it, is the problem.
But anyway, yeah, so he had a few scrapes during his early years, but it was around this time that he definitely found a love for being a daredevil.
Yeah, another hijink he got up to before he was a stuntman. There was a proposed elk cull in Montana, where he's from, and, well, he didn't want the elk culled. He wanted them put somewhere where they could be hunted, because he was a hunter. So he wanted to raise awareness of this, so he hitchhiked over 2,000 miles with a metre and a half elk antler strapped to his back to Washington, D.C., to raise awareness and so that he could hand in his petition to some senator.
And it worked.
Did it?
Yeah, culling was stopped in the late 60s.
Wow, fantastic.
But, you know, in addition to doing that, we can't forget, he also released a charity single to raise awareness for the elk.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, it was like a real precursor to Band-Aid and Live Aid. They had Elk Aid.
Oh, okay.
Around the time, there was like a lot of local groups, you know, this kind of movement to try and raise awareness for these elks. You know, don't cull the elk. Shoot them like a man with a hunting rifle.
Yeah, not from a helicopter.
No.
Never from a helicopter.
No, you have to look at the elk straight in the eyes as you kill them.
Yeah, that was the hook of the chorus, was it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, well, do you know, he was actually lifelong friends with Engelbert Humperdinck, so he probably had him perform.
Yeah, well, he had the sort of Bono-type verse in the song where he was like, "And tonight, thank God it's elk instead of you."
Oh, so that's actually bringing a tear to my eye.
Oh, I'd like, people hearing that would just be like, oh my God, yeah, I never thought about it like that. These poor elk.
People, you know, people hear a name like Engelbert Humperdinck and they have a little titter, but they forget the real work that he was doing to bring awareness to these issues.
Oh, one of the great minds of the 20th century, oh,
for sure.
Of
course, of course. Well, look, maybe we'll do him in another episode, because there's a man worth talking about.
Oh, absolutely. But he was really into his hunting. Like, around the time that he was starting his a family, his first son had just been born. He was kind of struggling to provide for his family. So he started up this this business called the Sir Kill Guide Service, which basically hunters would hire him for his service, and he promised that they would catch the big game animal that they desired to catch. And if they didn't catch the animal, then he would refund the entire fee.
Wow. See, if that was me, I'd be a bit nervous, you know, because it's wilderness. You're out in nature. You can't guarantee anything, really. You can't guarantee that an elk or a bear or whatever it is you want to catch and shoot is going to be there. So I'd probably have you dressed as whatever animal and just, like, be ready there on the last day. Say we're going to go out for 3 days camping,
yeah,
and hunting. Just, like, but it's getting near the end of day three. But, like, oh, better give Birch a call. And you come out in a bear suit. I know you've got one of them. Not, I don't want to get too much into your proclivities, but I know you've got a few of those suits lying around. And maybe a bulletproof vest on underneath. That's probably...
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, maybe more importantly than the bear suit, personally, I'd say.
Well, no, it doesn't work without the bear suit. They're not just going to shoot you if they think you're not a bear.
Yeah, I guess I'd need the bulletproof vest on first and then the bear suit.
Well, you don't want it the other way around. I mean, nobody...
Yeah, also I'd end up looking like a member of NWA.
Yeah. So you're there, right? The hunter's sort of like going, oh, kicking their feet, going, oh, I didn't get to shoot any bears. Oh, at least I get my refund. And then you sort of saunter out. Maybe we give you a little green hat like Yogi the Bear.
Well, I'd need a collar and a tie as well, wouldn't I?
Well, that's true. But you could also have a red jumper like Winnie the Pooh.
And then they look at me, they aim the gun. Get him! I get shot. Oh, bother.
Yeah, you fall down dead. Well, not really dead. Yeah.
Hang on, what would happen then? Because they're going to want to skin this animal.
Yeah.
If they skin me, they're going to find a man in a bulletproof vest.
Yeah, they might, actually. They might. No, maybe I haven't really thought this through.
Yeah.
We could figure it out on the day, though. Would you take a 5% cut?
Hang on, so we're actually doing this now?
Well, we're both out of prison. We need to make money somehow.
That is true.
I was a bit high before. Would you take 4%? 4% cut.
Hey, no, come on. You can't barter me lower when you've had the starting and second
all right,
bid.
All right. 5% cut.
That still doesn't sound too reasonable. I'm going to be honest. This is my life on the line here. And my bear costume that you're shooting holes into every time.
Well, yeah, that's true, yeah. How much does it cost to get a bear costume repaired?
I wouldn't know, Sean. I look after my things.
Sorry, I forget you're very precious about them.
Yeah, it only comes out on special occasions, the bear costume.
Yeah. The circles you run in, you're very, very concerned about what state your bear costume gets in.
Absolutely, yeah. But anyway, well, I can tell you how Evel Knievel did it.
Go on.
So, the odd occasion where, like you say, you're out in the wilderness, vast, vast wilderness, you can't always be sure that you're going to find something, so... On the occasion that they wouldn't find something, what they do is they take them to Montana Zoo.
Oh, well, there's lots of animals there.
You get to the end of the kind of time hunting, and then the guy be like, well, we've not found anything, so I guess you're going to have to give me my money back. And then Evel Knievel would be like, well, there's one more thing we can do. Look, get in the car, I'm going to take us to the zoo. It's like, the zoo? What are you talking about? Well, we're going to go shoot a lion at the zoo. It's like, no, that's not what I'm talking about, mate. And it's, look... You signed the contract. It says on there that I would provide you my services and promise that you would catch a big game animal. I didn't say where it would be coming from.
No. And do you want to feed your bloodlust or not?
Yeah, exactly. And at that point, they're like, oh, well, you're pulling my arm a bit there. Yeah, okay, I guess. But, I mean, he got a terrible, terrible reputation at Montana Zoo.
Yeah, I bet they revoked his season pass and everything.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they did. But he'd find a way in every once in a while. Like, they'd see him walking, like, every couple of weeks, they'd see him walking in with a new hunter, both brandishing hunting rifles. The owner would be there like, oh, God, not again. Look, Evel, mate, can you stop coming here? We have to get new lions and tigers and bears every week because of you. You take someone in and kill them. It's like, he's like, look, I pay for my zoo ticket, don't I? He's like, that doesn't give you the right to kill our animals.
And that is true because, you know, I've had this conversation myself at several zoos. That is almost like the zoo owner's, that's part of the zoo owner's code.
Yeah, that's almost like rule number one. Don't kill the animals.
I want to talk about his stunts now.
Yes.
This is what the man's known for, his stunts.
This is what we know and love him for.
Yeah. So he tried to support his family by being a stuntman. That's in a lot of the parenting books you'll find. That is page one of a lot of them.
Yeah.
He hadn't really made it happen as a kind of traveling stuntman. So he wanted to go big. He wanted to do something huge that was going to get some national attention. He was in Las Vegas. He saw the fountains at the Caesars Palace Casino. He said, I've got a little idea here. I've got something sprang to his mind. So he wanted to jump over them on a motorbike. And he had to first get the attention of the CEO. And did you know how he did this?
Yes, I do. It was 1967. What he did was he ended up creating a fictitious corporation called the Evel Knievel Enterprises, ended up making fake lawyers to call them, pretended to be ABC and Sports Illustrated, all contacting them.
To drum up some interest, yeah, all kind of badgering the CEO. But it worked. The guy let him do it. Once he got the permission, he tried to get somebody to cover the event, but nobody wanted to do it. So he just filmed it himself with a plan to sell the footage. And how did the jump go? Did he land it?
Well, let me just check my notes here that I have. No, he completely bollocks it up.
So he had a crushed pelvis and femur, fractures to his hip, wrist and both ankles, and a concussion that kept him in hospital. And what we're going to see is this is the start of a theme that really runs through a lot of Evel Knievel stunts, is crashing. And basically, after this point, he was completely uninsurable.
Well, I mean, with a crushed pelvis and a crushed femur.
Well, no, the crushed lemur, that was when he was in the Montana Zoo.
That's right. Well, there was... He must have had it in for them or something, because there was a lemur there at the... I mean, who brings a lemur to Las Vegas? I know it's like a place of decadence and debauchery, but there was just like a little lemur there roaming around. It pretty much broke his fall.
He scooped it up. That was his lucky lemur, because although he didn't land the stunt, he didn't die. And I think from then on, that's probably explains why he always carried a lemur on him as he was flying through the air. He just tucked one underneath his femur to protect it.
That's right, yeah. He always said, didn't he, a lemur on your femur goes a long way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's funny, actually, because truthfully, he was a big advocate for motorbike helmets and bike helmets in general. And he used to start every stunt. He would always tell people and the kids in the audience that he's got to wear them. And he did national campaigns. And people said that he, you know, actually has probably saved loads of lives just because he put so much emphasis on that. And people forget, though, that he also, at the same time, pulled out a lemur and said, a lemur for your femur, it'll save your life. And for some reason, that just didn't catch on in the same way.
Yeah, I don't know why. Like, when you think of how many lemurs do save lives every year.
More than seatbelts.
Better than the Heimlich manoeuvre.
They're good for that as well, actually.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you grab a lemur by the tail, somebody's choking, you start bashing someone in the back with a lemur.
Yeah, that's an interesting technique, because I just get them, and then they've got their little hands, and they reach down the throat and grab whatever's blocking the windpipe. That's what I usually do. But interesting technique you've got there.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just from, again, it's just from what I've seen of Evel Knievel. That's what he used to do. Again, he'd rock up at Montana Zoo.
the zookeeper's there rolling his eyes.
It's just like, oh, God, not you again. What do you want? He's like, there's a woman choking. Where's the lemur enclosure? He's like, for God's sake, man, just use the Heimlich manoeuvre. He's like, no, there's no time. There's no time. He goes over, grabs a couple of lemurs, starts whipping them around like nunchucks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Smack, straight to the back. Chunk of lion flies out.
That zoo must hate him.
I knew that we were going to be talking about Evel Knievel. And, you know, I thought, why don't I try and do a kind of Evel Knievel style stunt?
Oh, wow.
You know, this is the thing. You want to leave a mark when you leave prison.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not talking about, you know, cutting somebody or, you know, killing a guard. I'm talking about, like, leaving a wholesome mark on people that they'll always look back and go, oh, remember Sean? Remember that wonderful stunt he did on his last week? Just to give us some hope and some fun and some enjoyment.
Yeah, no, I agree. You want people to think back on their time being incarcerated with, like, a smile on their lips.
Exactly, yeah. What I did is I enlisted the help of my friends. By now, you know, my prison gang.
Oh, yeah.
Me, the Hemsworths, and the Minogues. So we didn't have a water fountain because we wanted to do the Caesar's Palace jump that Knievel did. So what we got is Liam Hemsworth. He lay on his back on the ground in the prison yard. And then we just got him like a nearly endless supply of Cherryade.
Oh.
And then he's just like glugging it and then just on his back sort of spouting it up, like making his own water fountain. I'm in a mop bucket, right? One of those ones with wheels.
Oh, right.
And I'm sort of like pushing myself along with the mop. And to make it a bit more interesting, because, you know, surely that is death-defying. And, you know, Liam could have got a mop in the face. But just to make it a bit more interesting, I've got the other Hemsworth brothers, Chris and Claude, are on my back. And they're holding a Minogue each.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and we're kind of doing this kind of like V shape.
Oh, yeah.
So we're racing towards this ramp that's next to Liam. Now, with the ramp, woodworking class was closed that week, so we had to build our own ramp. Because we've been building the prison that we're in, what they do is they just ship over like a... You know when you go into IKEA and you see like the bedrooms in the display? So basically what the prison's been doing is just buying those wholesale. And then what we do is they don't want us to have like the nice picture frames and the books and the bookshelves. So we just chuck all that out and just keep the walls. So we have loads of like styrofoam packaging left over. So we grab some of that styrofoam and we kind of like molded it into a ramp. We kind of like sat on it and squashed it and heated it up and made it into a ramp. So we're racing towards this ramp now.
Yeah, presumably like you're kind of like almost curling as well, like with the mop in front of the bucket.
I'm almost like, in fact, more like a skier. I'm slaloming, you know.
Ooh.
And I'm really getting some speed up now, right? And there's a bit of a slant, and the you know, I don't know why, but the Hemsworths are very aerodynamic. It's like a spoiler on a car. So we're racing towards the ramp. Liam's there. He's underneath it. He's spouting Cherryade. Now, at the very last moment, and Danny was quite nervous, okay? She's the lesser Minogue, as everybody knows.
Well, yeah, I mean, she's there with her big sister, so of course she's going to be terrified.
Yeah, exactly. So Danny, she's in a nervous state. She lets out this tremendous, earth-shaking, styrofoam, ramp-crumbling belch.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I'd be surprised if you didn't hear it. In your prison, on the other side of the planet, it was that loud.
Oh, blimey.
Anyway, so, as I said, styrofoam crumbling belch. The styrofoam ramp just fell to pieces before we even reached it. We ploughed straight into Liam. So we career into him. He's spraying Cherryade everywhere because he's got a whole belly full, and then we smash straight into his stomach and it just comes out, you know, like squeezing a whoopee cushion full of Cherryade. Now the crowd goes wild, right? They think this is all part of the stunt.
They lift up one of those like see-through plastic sheets when the Cherryade comes up. They're like, hey,
exactly. And you know, it's like they went wild. The guards rush in to see what the commotion is because we hadn't mentioned it to them. They found us like in a pile in the middle of the prison yard, covered in Cherryade, but they think that's blood because it's so red.
Oh God.
They think we've all been fighting and we've all like killed each other. One of them cracks Claude Hemsworth on the back of the head with a cosh. Yeah, within moments, we've got this full-scale riot. It took 3 days to die down. And, you know, of course, unfortunately, my mop privileges were revoked. And it wasn't exactly the high that I wanted to leave on when I said goodbye to St. Drongo's. So, you know, make of that what you will. I don't know if you chalk that up as a success or not, but we certainly pleased the crowd.
That's the main thing. I mean, but these bloody guards, I mean, what the hell are they playing at?
Well, I don't think they can take the full blame because this was part of our meticulous planning of the stunt. You know, we picked the prime opportunity when the guards would be at their least aware. And, you know, the time we picked was the staff toilet break because, you know, the warden says it's more efficient if all the guards go to the toilet at the same time.
Right, on one giant toilet.
No, well, that would be funny. But I think they've got two or three between them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, once an hour, all the guards say, right, we're off. Now you guys just keep a lid on it, okay? We don't want to come back and find any trouble. So we did pick the opportune moment, so I can't blame them completely.
Fair enough. I mean, did it light a spark in you, like young Evel Knievel when he did those early stunts as a young man? Has it kind of ignited a rebellious daredevil flame inside of you?
Yes.
Good.
I would say it has, actually. Yes, I would say it has. Just on my way over here, I slapped a lollipop lady.
Oh, Sean.
What, is that too much?
You slapped a lollipop lady?
Well, I mean, she slapped me first.
What? Set the scene. What happened?
Well, you know, I was walking along the street. I saw that big lollipop.
Yeah.
I thought, hello, right? Lollipop lady.
Hello, all right, darling.
Well, basically, you got the gist of it there already, I think. I catcalled her.
Oh, no. Sean, I know you've been in prison for all those years, but, I mean, come on. Keep it together for a second.
What? Are you telling me society's moved on and catcalling elderly lollipop ladies is no longer socially acceptable?
What I'm saying is you got to remember, like, lollipop lady, as far as I'm concerned, it's the hardest job in the world. You think about the responsibilities that they have, those ladies of the lollipop. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
She's just like waiting there, just like, oh, when does this shift finish? Presumably when school starts, but she's there waiting on a like long shift, just like, oh, when is this going to be over? And then like, she just wants to get through her day. She doesn't want to be catcalled.
Yeah. No, you're right. They do have a lot of responsibility.
Hang on. Was this earlier today?
On the way over here. Yeah.
You know what? I think I know the one that you're talking about because. I was racing along on my motorcycle to get to the park to get there. I noticed that there's a bit of a crossing ahead, and like sure enough, there was like a lollipop woman there. And I'm thinking,
not a woman, Birch, a lady. Give her some goddamn respect.
I'm sorry. No, you're quite right. A lollipop lady. I saw there was a lollipop lady there, so I was like, well, you know, hardest job in the world, as we all know. So I thought, I think I'll just show my respect. You know, so I rolled up there. Started revving the engine. I was like, I just want to say, I think what you do a fantastic job, love. Hats off to you. And she said, okay, well, thank you very much. And I put my hand on her back, you know, just like a friendly chummy, like pat on the back. And I don't know what it is that happened, but her coat must have got caught on one of my buckles on like my leather jacket.
Oh, of course, because you're riding a motorbike, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm riding a motorbike, that's right.
You're dressed like Marlon Brando.
That's right, yeah. I had the hat, the cool kind of, I don't even know what kind of hat that is, but I was wearing it. And So I was like, see you around, rev the engine, race down this street. All of a sudden I just hear, ah, in the distance behind me. I was like, what the hell was that? I look round, her coat has been caught on my jacket. I turn round, I see her. There she is, naked as the day she was born, right?
God. Yeah.
Trying to keep her modesty, covering up with a lollipop, which is a bit difficult because there's probably three spots that she needs to cover up.
I can think of at least three.
And she's there screaming like, oh my God, oh my God. I kind of like go back round. I turn the bike around, try to ride over to her. Her coat gets caught up in my back wheel.
Right. Oh yeah.
Disintegrates this thing.
Okay.
I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. And I go over to her, like, oh, look, I'm sorry, love. And she's like, what is it? What is it with you perverts, you young reprobates? And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, just earlier today I had some bloke catcalling me, and now I got this. I got some other young people taking my clothes off, stripping me off when I'm trying to do my livelihood. Is this funny to you? I was like, look, I don't know anything about that. It was an honest mistake, all right? So, yeah, she was having a go at me. I was like, she was like, look, I'm stark naked now. You give me your jacket. I was like, yeah. Look, it was an accident. I can't give you this jacket. This is a custom Marlon Brando jacket. I was like, you ever seen The Wild Ones? And she was like, no, I don't give a shit about that. I'm seeing a fucking wild one now. You give me your jacket, mate. I was like, I can't. I said, I'll give you the Marlon Brando hat. And she was like, give me the hat then. and she used the hat to cover one of her tits. And I was like, look, I can't do much else for you. I think I saw a payphone about 200 feet down the road there. I don't have any change on me. I just got out of prison, so...
well, yeah.
See ya. And I rode off.
Oh, well, it does sound like she's had a hell of a day. I really thought you were going to give her the jacket. I really thought this story was going to end with a lollipop lady dressed like Marlon Brando, which, I mean, in itself would have been quite a funny end to that story.
Maybe this is just a normal day in the life of a lollipop lady.
Who knows? Who knows? They're out in the public. They're out in the world. They've probably got having all sorts of crazy experiences every day.
Yeah, but I don't know one personally. Do you? Does anyone?
A lollipop lady? No, I mean...
A mysterious creature, the lollipop lady.
For all I know, they're angels. Like real-life angels come down to help us.
Oh, they're bloody real-life angels to me, mate. I'll tell you.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
We should probably talk some more about some of Knievel's stunts.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I think the next big one that he attempted was the Snake River Canyon jump in 1974.
Yeah, so this is interesting because he'd been saying for years that he was going to jump over the Grand Canyon and the government wouldn't let him do it. And I think you'd even said to me off air that you thought he had done it, which kind of is a testament to his marketing, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it's almost like a, what do they call it, like a Mandela effect. Like, he's so closely linked to the idea of jumping over the gorge of Grand Canyon that people, I guess, just assume that he did, but turns out he didn't.
Yeah, but like you say, it was Nelson Mandela who did jump the gorge in the Grand Canyon.
That's right, on a pair of rollerblades, no less.
Yeah, yeah, well, Knievel did the Snake River Canyon because the government wouldn't let him do the Grand Canyon. So he basically found a private bit of land and leased it and built the ramp. But he didn't do it on a bike, did he, this time? He did it in a kind of rocket.
Yeah, a rocket car, Sky Cycle X2.
Yeah, now, they call it the Sky Cycle, but it really is like a rocket. It doesn't look anything like a bike or a cycle.
I've not seen inside the thing, so maybe there was a set of pedals?
Well, that's true, yeah, yeah.
And I mean, like... spoilers for the listeners, maybe that's why he didn't actually make the jump entirely, because he was going along as fast as he could, pedaling his heart out. I was just like, I'm not going to make this. Oh, eject the parachute.
This is his most Wile E. Coyote antic, I would say. He's in a rocket. It's got pedals. It's also powered by steam, which apparently reached temperatures of 260 degrees Celsius. It was a real rocket. Like, it really was. Pedals or not. Maybe they just put the pedals in to just keep him happy, make him think that he's doing something.
I like the idea that there's these other people. Like, give him something to keep him occupied while he's in the rocket.
Well, yeah, because really at that stage, if he's not steering it because it's on a ramp, it just goes straight up the ramp and over. He's not powering it because it's steam-powered rocket. What is he doing? You could have put a lollipop lady in there for all it mattered.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to shit on the guy's legacy or anything, but... he wasn't pressing any buttons. He wasn't steering the thing. I guess he ejected the parachute. But if anything,
no,
that...
He didn't even do that.
He didn't?
No. The parachute came out like it was a malfunction, basically. Which is basically, to get onto what happened, he flew up into the air in the rocket. And then there was a malfunction and the parachute ended up getting dragged out. And he didn't even make it like halfway across. He just sailed down into this canyon. And then, you know, as he's climbing out, the little roadrunner comes past and goes, meep, meep, and then runs off again, and he just shakes his fist at it.
He pulls out a little sign out of his back pocket, and he just says, dang, on it.
He had that ready. So, another failure for the great man. Next stunt, Wembley Stadium, 1975.
Yes, our home turf.
Our home turf, because we were both born... in the stands of Wembley Stadium, of course.
That's right, both of us.
Yeah, yeah. Our parents were big sports fans.
Yep, that's right.
There to see the football.
Yep, that the beautiful game, as they call it. Oh,
they do in my house, they do. So yeah, literally our home turf. So he's in front of 90,000 people showed up to watch him, and he was going to jump 13 London buses. Now, when you picture a London bus, what do you picture?
A big red thing.
Big red thing, right? Probably you're thinking a double-decker. around the world, if you say like a London bus, that's what people picture. These 13 buses he jumped, not even double-deckers, just single-deckers.
Ugh.
Anyway, he crashed and broke his pelvis.
Yeah, there's a running theme here, isn't there, with these stunts, I think.
Crashing, yeah, and hurting himself.
But, I mean, I remember reading that, of course, like, the London bus is sort of like a quite a symbol of Britishness. And so he's like, oh, yeah, I want to jump something that will be, like, really synonymous with the UK and England. And I was like, oh, how about the London bus? And they were toying with, like, a few ideas at the time of what they should go with. The first thing that they tried was like a massive mound of Cornish pasties.
Mm, yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah, well they tried it. It was never filmed, but they gave it a go. And you know what he's like. He was like revving his engine. He was going along the ramp. He probably skidded on a Scotch egg or something. Ended up crashing the thing, plunging headfirst into a massive pile of Cornish pasties, which, quite frankly, would be my dream, but maybe not Evel Knievel's dream.
No, he doesn't understand the Cornish pasty, does he? He wants a hot dog and a shake.
Yeah, they had like a little test audience there watching him do this, and like he fell into it, and he's like, he gets out, and apparently he's all like, oh God, what is this? I fell into a pasty? And I mean, that just got boo, you scumbag, get out of our country, you cunt.
I mean, he didn't realise that he was doing this in front of an audience of primarily Cornish miners as well. I mean, these people, this is their lunch, this is their livelihood, this is their life and their love, the Cornish pasty.
That's right, yeah. And so they were all going, get off my land, you bastard. And he was like, I can't understand what you're saying. Speak American. Oh, that just riled them up more.
Riled them up more. They probably ended up throwing some more Cornish pasties at him.
They would if they didn't love him so much. But like they maybe like aimed it as like, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't blame him. The one of his later, greater ones that he attempted, the shark jump, 1977.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, which was inspired by the film Jaws.
Yeah, which had come out a couple of years prior, I think, 1975. So yeah. He wanted to jump over a tank of sharks.
Oh, I mean, just hearing it sounds just so exciting. Live sharks in a tank. Not dead ones, live living sharks.
Yeah, they fed them and everything.
Absolutely. And there was a risk that they were going to be fed again.
Yeah, so this one, surprise, surprise, he crashed. But this time, he crashed into a cameraman.
And yeah, he took someone else out with him.
Yeah, he said, I've had enough of breaking my own arms. He did break both his arms in this stunt as well, by the way. But he was like, I'm going to break somebody else's arms as well, and I'm going to cushion my fall.
I've suffered enough embarrassment on my own. I'm going to make someone else feel like a right twat.
Yeah, he crashed into the cameraman. Now, he did actually feel really bad about that. He was actually pretty distraught about hurting somebody other than himself, which is interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, he banned the footage of it for years. Like it wasn't made viewable to the public for like 19 years.
Well, I've watched it. It's not very interesting anyway.
See, I've seen it, and I gotta say, funny stuff
crashing into the cameraman.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you saw that on like You've Been Framed, you'd be clapping and laughing, going, give that man the 250 quid.
Put some sound effects underneath it, like a whoop kind of thing as he goes over the tank.
Jeremy Beadle commenting over the top of it.
Now, you went for Jeremy Beadle. My first thought was Dawn French. I think she might have hosted it at some point. And before that, wasn't it Lisa Tarbuck?
you're confusing your overweight women with black hair, I'm afraid.
Well, Dawn French, I'm pretty sure, did host it at one point.
I don't think she did.
Oh, I think I put money on it. In the 2000s, long after people stopped watching it, and it was just me.
Hang on. Let me check my mobile phone that the prison kindly gave me.
Check it. Check it and see, mate. Just Google, did Dawn French host You've Been Framed.com.
No, so you got Jeremy Beadle, you got Lisa Riley, who is the person I think you're thinking of, and then someone called Jonathan Wilkes.
It was Lisa Riley. This is it. I found a... a Reddit post from 3 years ago. Somebody said, did anybody else used to think that Dawn French hosted You've Been Framed?
Oh, another Mandela effect. This is crazy.
Oh, stumbling upon them. No, I don't think Mandela hosted.
No, he'd have been great.
Look, somebody else on Twitter. Remember when it was hosted by Dawn French?
This is a conspiracy we've stumbled across.
I think so, yeah. I feel like we've stumbled off topic more than usual at this point. Maybe we should try and veer back.
Okay.
Or is it too late?
We'll save You've Been Framed for another time.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, mate, I'm feeling quite bad about what we've done to that lollipop lady. I think we owe her a proper apology.
I agree. I'm getting real pangs of guilt from what happened to her earlier. So, yeah, I mean, I think the least that we can do is buy her a bunch of flowers.
Let's nip over to the garage forecourt just across the road. I'm sure they've sell flowers.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be the nicest pair. A sorry's a sorry, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All right, we'll go get some.
10 minutes later.
Sean! Oh, my God, Sean!
What? What is it?
Sean! Oh, my God, Sean. Oh, my God, you're not going to guess. Look, we're in the newspaper.
What? I thought you meant to be getting flowers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I can go back and get those. It's not a problem. Look, we're in the newspaper. I told my parents.
Right, show me. Come on, show me. Show me. What does it say?
Let's have a look. Right, okay. Well, it's got our pictures. Right, let's have a look at the headline. Wanted: fugitives who plotted international breakout escape.
What? But I didn't break out. I got let out of prison.
Let's just have a quick read. So, notorious criminals, James Birch and Sean Kennelly, that's you, says here, incarcerated for the attempted murder of an innocent bin man. Let's have a look, yada, yada, yada. Over the course of the years, the pair plotted a daring escape in which Sean Kennelly sent motorcycle parts to James Birch via a cake, which was never spotted by the prison guards. Using these parts, he built a motorcycle and escaped. On his escape, the guards say, James Birch was heard screaming, I'm free, you fools, and it's all thanks to Sean Kennelly, my prison buddy, all the way in Australia. It's because of him that we're both free now. Yippee. God, they remembered that word for word.
I'm going to be honest, I'm pretty upset that you said that.
I mean, it was true, wasn't it?
Like I said, I didn't know that you were going to build a motorbike with those parts. I had no idea you were going to escape. You were 12 hours from being released.
I forgot that, didn't I? Let's have a look. Does it mention that? It says here, Birch was only 12 hours away from being released from prison, but instead opted to escape via the south wall of the prison in the motorcycle that he'd built, aided by Sean Kennelly, it says again.
Yeah, they like that detail, don't they?
The two are wanted, at large, and extremely dangerous. Approach with caution. The pair were last spotted yesterday sexually assaulting a lollipop lady. What?
Oh, no. Oh, no, this doesn't look good.
No, I mean, what you did was a little bit on the edge, but I mean, what I did was an innocent mistake.
They're not going to think that, Birch. You were a prison escapee.
Years we waited to be released, and now it looks as though we're going to be ending up back in there again.
I'm not going back inside.
No, neither am I. I have had enough caviar to last me a lifetime.
What are we going to do then? I think we're going to have to go on the run.
I think you're right.
Okay, well, thank you for listening, folks. You know, a bit of bad news on our end about us now having to go on the run, but we appreciate you listening. And, well, I mean, if you've enjoyed the podcast, please let us know.
Yeah, please do. You can let us know in a number of different ways. You can contact us by email, for one, mailboxroguesgallery@gmail.com.
And we're also on Twitter @mailboxrogues.
You can always contact us on Facebook and Instagram as well.
And if you're listening on iTunes, please do give us a rating and a review.
It's Apple Podcasts, mate. What do you think this is, 2014? Yeah.
I've been in prison, mate. The world's passed me by.
Fair enough. But yeah, Apple Podcasts or anywhere else that you listen to your podcasts.
Right, well, we've wrapped up the episode. I think we need to hit the road.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, it is sad to be put in the front page of a newspaper as an escaped convict, but at the same time, it's also a little bit exciting, you know, taking this podcast on the road. We'll get to see the width and breadth of the country. I'm sure we'll meet some crazy characters along the way.
I'm sure we will.
So, who do you want to talk about next time?
Well, listen, mate, I've got a guy I know from prison who I think can set us up in a nice job where we can lay low. And I get the feeling we'll end up talking about Salvador Dali while we do.
Really? That sounds fascinating. Well, you know me, I'm always in.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, guys. It's goodbye from Birch.
And it's goodbye from Sean.
Toodles.
Goodbye. Right, so jump on the back of this hog and let's get out of here.
All right. Away we go!